Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back to Clay and Buck. We've told you we're going to dig deep, go to the bottom, the origins of the Russia collusion lie. We're not going to let it just go away because the left doesn't want to talk about it anymore after 3 years of obsessing over it. And we've got the Sussman trial underway right now. Our friend Andy McCarthy joins. He's at National Review, a Fox News contributor, spent over 20 years as an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Andy, great to have you back.
Hey, guys, how are you? Good to be with you.
Good, Andy. So what is the biggest revelation takeaway for you so far in the Sussman trial? Obviously, the Robbie Mook testimony about Hillary giving the order when it comes to the Russia collusion investigation and pushing that forward to the FBI seems like a big deal. But what are your biggest takeaways?
Well, my biggest concern going into the trial, Buck, was that Durham has really planted his flag here on something I think that is a dubious proposition. In federal law, if it was a crime to make a false statement, he'd be fine. The problem is the crime is making a false statement to the FBI. And Durham has basically, his theory of his case is that the FBI was duped here. And I think those of us who watch this closely for a long time think it's more complicated than that, to say the least. And I was afraid that the FBI would give Sussman a lot of his defense in this case. And I think that has turned out to be true. So while it should be a slam dunk case because the lie that's charged is that he claimed he wasn't representing anyone when in fact he was representing the Clinton campaign, that seems to be clear. And you have to prove materiality. It should be easy to prove materiality because obviously the reason he lied was because if he had said, I'm here from the Clinton campaign bringing you some opposition research about the opposition candidate who we're running against in 6 weeks. They would have looked at the information very differently. The whole reason for the lie is obvious. So they should be able to prove this. The problem is it's come out in the last couple of days that, you know, the FBI claimed in their paperwork opening the case that the information hadn't come from Sussman, but it came from the Justice Department, which is not true. So if you're prosecuting a false statements to the FBI and the FBI itself has made a false statement in its investigation opening document, that's not a great way to kick it off. And it just seems to me that the reason that they concealed his identity, that is Sussman's identity, you know, they say they wanted to treat him like a confidential informant. There was no reason to treat him like a confidential informant. He wasn't under any threat. They treated him like a confidential informant, which allowed them to conceal his identity from the agents who were doing the investigation because they knew they were taking explosive political information from a political source and they didn't want to get caught doing it. So they knew they were playing with fire, and it just goes to show that, you know, the FBI's position here is not the usual position we expect to find the FBI in.
Okay, Andy, he gets convicted, he doesn't get convicted. What does it mean going forward? Because at a minimum, we now have an under oath testimony from Hillary Clinton's campaign manager that she was directly involved, at least in knowledge, about the fact that they were sharing this information. If he is found not guilty, if he is found guilty, what does it mean going forward in your mind as to this overall and overarching investigation?
You know, the thing is, Clay, I think you're asking me what's sensible as a legal question, and it makes perfect sense. But I think the question is really more political than legal. It, just in a very blunt bottom line sense, I think if Sussman gets acquitted, the media is just going to kill Durham's investigation. And we may be able to analyze it logically and legally and say, you know, look, the evidence here showed that Sussman lied, and it showed even more that the FBI was acting in a very curious way throughout this investigation and clearly was in the tank to this whole idea that Trump was in a corrupt relationship with Russia, which guided a lot of its activity, not just in this case, but also in the broader investigation. So, I think we can look at this and still take things away from it that are very valuable in terms of the historical record. But in terms of the impact of Durham's investigation, which, you know, by the way, it's not exactly capturing the imagination of the country, right? I mean, it's not like people are paying rapt attention to this. But I think that the media is just going to, if Sussman walks, then the media is just going to say, you know, Durham has wasted everyone's time for 3 years.
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? After Mueller really wasted everybody's time for as long as he did, the narrative could turn into, well, Durham, you know, it's just stunning. And we're speaking to Andy McCarthy here, everybody, National Review, Fox News, former assistant U.S. attorney for, Andy, what, 23 years? Is that right? You were there a while.
About 20, close.
About 20, okay. So, Andy, on the Durham report, there's supposed to be a report, right? Isn't that how this is eventually going to be finished up? Is that something that you expect is going to come out this year? Do we have any? Basically, is this going to amount to anything? You know, because a lot of people were promised a lot of things for a long time about getting everything we said about Russia collusion. It was a Hillary plot. The FBI went with it, fell for it, whatever. The deep state pushed it. The media amplified it and were colluding in it. Does the Durham thing go anywhere? Because it sounds to me like you're worried. Not really.
Well, I think you get a final report at the end, whether that'll be this year or not. I hope it's this year, but, you know, Durham's made some sounds the last 3 weeks like he's not done yet, that there may be more charges. Now, maybe there will be, maybe there won't be, but what I would caution people who get all excited whenever he says such things is twofold. Number one, the statute of limitations for most federal crimes is 5 years. And most of what went on here happened in 2016, 2017. So, you know, time's a wasting if you're going to indict something within the statute of limitations. And then the second thing, I'm going to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but I'm going to repeat what I said at the beginning. If you want the big fraud on the government case here, the only way you make that is if the FBI is in on it. And Durham's theory seems to be that the FBI was duped, which is proving to be a big problem for him, I think, in the Sussman case as it is. So I wouldn't expect a big indictment on a theory that the government agencies were defrauded here by the Clinton campaign. But he is supposed to write a narrative report. I think that the reason that Bill Barr made him a special counsel rather than just an ordinary prosecutor is that ordinary prosecutors, like when I was at the Southern District of New York, If I didn't have enough evidence to make a case, I closed the file and moved on to the next case. Special counsel have to write a final report. It's supposed to be a confidential report that you write to the attorney general summarizing the investigation and explaining your charging decisions. Customarily, most of these have become public like the Mueller investigation did in substantially public. There's a lot of stuff you have to withhold, like grand jury information or classified information. But for the most part, you get the story. The thing is, I don't know, guys, if the media is going to agitate for the Durham report the same way they agitated for the Mueller report, particularly if there's acquittals along the way. I mean, I just wonder how hard people are going to fight over it.
Andy, sitting here as a lawyer, I always like to analyze what is the jury potentially going to look like? What might their preconceptions be? What might their internal biases be? This is obviously a huge part of any jury selection. And of all places to have a trial, forum shopping wise for Hillary Clinton, you may be able to name a better one. I can't really think of one better than Washington, D.C., which is an overwhelmingly Democrat city. In addition to the challenges you're mentioning that Sussman's conviction may entail, purposed for Durham, how would you analyze the people who are making the decision here, and how much does that factor in terms of guilt or innocence?
Yeah, I think you're really hitting on the main thing. You know, I've said a number of times that Durham may represent the government, but this is not a home game for the government, this trial. And I think it's even worse in some ways because the judge has a lot of ties to Clinton world. He's an Obama appointee. Just so people understand what I mean when I say he's got ties to Clinton world. When he got out of law school, he clerked for a pretty famous judge on the D.C. Circuit named Abner Mikva. And the year his clerkship ended, Mikva went to the Clinton White House to become the White House counsel to Bill Clinton. And Cooper, the judge, went to the Justice Department to work for Amy Gorelick, who was the Deputy Attorney General in the Justice Department. So his Clinton ties go back a long way, and there are a lot of suggestions that he shouldn't be sitting on this case because he might be too conflicted. He doesn't think he was. And I think his looseness in terms of analyzing conflicts of interest spread over into the picking of the jury. So he seemed to think that as long as he told the jurors that Donald Trump is not on trial here and Hillary Clinton is not on trial, that somehow talismanically, magically removed the political overtones from the case, which, of course, it doesn't. If it wasn't for Clinton and Trump, there wouldn't be any case. But nevertheless, because that was his approach, we have people on the jury who basically said during the selection process that they contribute to Democrats, that they supported Clinton, that they oppose Trump. And we have one juror who disclosed in the middle of the trial, and I think she did this in good faith. I don't mean to suggest otherwise, but she came in one day and she said, oh, I just found out that my daughter is on the same sports school team as Sussman's daughter. I think they're on a crew team together.
D.C. is a small town, by the way, for people out there who are like, that's crazy. Yeah. It's really not a big population.
Nope.
Andy, before I let you go, could I just ask you, obviously the biggest thing on everyone's minds across the country right now is this horrific shooting that occurred in Uvalde. You were a federal prosecutor, as we said, for over 20 years. You put away mob hitmen, terrorists. You prosecuted the first World Trade Center bombing bombers. Is there anything that you think, you know, from a legal perspective, either in the toolkit of the legislature or as just prosecutors, from a legal perspective, is there something that could be done to try to stop these kinds of mass murdering psychopaths before they can engage in them? I just wanted to pose that to you. I mean, you're a true expert. You're a guy who's really been there and been on the front lines, stared down evil. What could we do?
Well, Buck, you know, no constitutional right is absolute, right? Any right, even liberty, can be removed as long as you accord due process of law, right? You have to prove things beyond a reasonable doubt to remove someone's liberty. So in my own mind, I could concoct like a red flag type system that would have enough due process rights that we could have confidence in it, that you might be able to remove guns from people if you could make a showing that they were, you know, mentally disturbed in some way, or you know, we could hash out the grounds for it. The problem is, I don't think, even if I could come up with something perfect legally, I don't think the Democrats can be trusted politically not to use these processes punitively, because every place we turn, they're using, like, they're weaponizing the Justice Department. So if you're a numbskull and you're wandering around the Capitol, you're not doing anything violent, but you're in a place where you shouldn't be, they'll haul you back 2,000 miles from New Mexico and make you stand in a misdemeanor trial. But if you're camped outside a Supreme Court justice's lawn, you know, on their property, protesting for abortion rights, they said, well, as long as they're being peaceful, it doesn't make any difference. So they're so political, the way that they use the processes that we give them. I have a hard time in good conscience saying, well, why don't we come up with a new legal system that can be used to remove guns from people, when I don't have confidence it'll just be used in good faith.
Clay and I totally agree, by the way. We're just nodding our heads.
I mean, that is so well said, I think. Indeed. Andy McCarthy, we appreciate it. We know how busy you are. That's been a fantastic analysis of all this.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great week.
We will, for sure. Look, a lot of people out there getting dressed for events. Maybe you got graduations coming up. Maybe you got a variety of different events where you know you need to get dressed up, but you also still want to be comfortable. How do you find something that balances both? Well, we got it for you. It's the Wolf and Shepherd shoe. The mission is simple. Equip professionals with footwear they feel comfortable in all day. When that happens, everything else falls into place. Their founder is a former track athlete and designer who bought athletic shoe innovation to dress shoes. He brought this right to the combo, and their most popular style is called the crossover. That's because it's a business meets athletic shoe that features full grain Italian leathers and an athletic sole. Feels like you're wearing athletic shoes, looks like you're wearing a dress shoe. You get all day comfort and style and likely some compliments as well. Buck's got a closet full of these. I got to tell you, I'm wearing this crossover right now, getting tons of compliments. It's a fantastic shoe. A lot of you out there listening to us, Father's Day's coming up, and you're trying to figure out, maybe you don't like dad's shoes, maybe you don't like grandpa's shoes. How about hooking them up with a brand new Wolf and Shepherd shoe? They are phenomenal, and you can make them a part of your wardrobe right now. Better footwear for the workday. Join the pack at wolfandshepherd.com. Go online, wolfandshepherd.com. No promo code needed. That's wolfandshepherd.com, spelled S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, wolfandshepherd.com.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. On Purpose is dedicated to helping you be happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how he got comfortable with fear, navigating the changes in relationships, and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern. This conversation shows a never-seen-before side to Orlando Bloom and his unique life journey.
I think we all struggle sometimes to really deeply believe that we are enough, that we're valued, that we're valuable. You know, we're imprinted by our parents from the age of 0 to 7, right? Mm. I'm constantly trying to go, like, how do I detach from this idea of, is that my baggage? I look like my baggage. I mean, I know, okay, that's mine. Let's unpack that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
Podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back to Clay and Buck. Just so you know, I'm going to be rolling solo here for a few minutes. Clay had something he had to go take care of. He's going to go pick up his boys at school. So I am going to be captaining the ship alone for just a little bit. If you don't hear Clay's voice, just wanted you to know that's where we are. I do want to talk, obviously, about the election results from last night in Georgia specifically. And here's just something. And this is a hat tip, my friend Ryan Gruduski, a political consultant and analyst, for sharing this out there. Georgia GOP primary turnout by year. He just put this out. Get ready for this, everybody, okay? 2006, 419. I'm just going to round to the thousand. 419,000. 2010, 680,000. Okay, it's pretty high, right? 2014, 596,000. It dropped down a little bit. 2018, 608,000. That's pretty good. 2022, 1.1 million. This is what you just shared out. I'm sitting here saying, oh my gosh. So that's obviously indicative of a lot of interest, a lot of people looking at this and saying, wow, they are really really motivated to get out there and vote in Georgia. So I know you know some of who won, some of the results, but we'll dive into that more together here in just a few moments, as well as some of the other big races out there. So some politics coming your way. If you've ever, if you did own a business through COVID, there's a payroll tax rebate plan that you may qualify for. If your business has five or more employees, you're eligible to receive a payroll tax rebate of $26,000 per employee. This isn't a loan. There's no payback. It's a refund of taxes that you already had to pay. The challenge is getting your hands on it. How do you cut through the government bureaucracy and get your business the refund money you deserve, you're entitled to? Go to GetRefunds.com. Just go to that website, GetRefunds.com. Their tax attorneys are specialists in this little-known payroll tax refund program. They do all the work with no charge up front and simply share a percentage of the cash they get for you. Businesses of all types can qualify, including those who took PPP, nonprofits, even those who had an increase in sales. The average client gets $400,000 back. Go to GetRefunds.com right now. They've helped over 10,000 companies receive over $1 billion in cash rebates. That website is GetRefunds.com. No risk, high reward.
Shame on the Democrats who pushed the big lie that a grand scheme was afoot to prevent millions of Americans from voting. It was never true. It was just to push their pre-existing policy agenda. The fake hysteria was just a pretext to push a sweeping national takeover of election laws that Democrats had already had on the shelf for a number of years. Now, the rhetoric is proving false right before our eyes. These common sense Republican laws appear to be achieving just what the American people want. The American people want to make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. This whole episode proves exactly why our democracy still needs its cooling saucer.
Even Mitch McConnell gets it when it comes to Georgia, friends, because the numbers are speaking loud and clear on this one. Record turnout in the primary in Georgia yesterday. As we know, we had, by the way, Clay is back with us. So look at this. I thought you threw the smoke bomb. You're back already. You know, you're
The kids got let out of school, Buck, early. It's the final day of school for my kids. And the moment I got there, they were already coming out, hopped in the car. It took me like 4 minutes to pick them up, unprecedented speed. So yes, I'm back. Kids are, if you hear kids screaming, in the Travis household, they're probably screams of joy because school is officially out in their department. And for the next couple of months, they're going to be playing a lot of video games. Let's be honest here.
So here's where we are in Georgia. Just so put us all on the same page here. Who won? Who lost? And what happens now? And what does this tell us about the future and the midterm election specifically. So Kemp won, the sitting governor, defeated a primary challenge and won by a lot. I think it was like a 70, give or take 70-20 situation. Herschel Walker cruised to, high stepping into the end zone,
yes,
if you will.
Yes, good analogy.
Thank
yes.
you. See, I learned
he
the stiff
arm the competition.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
So Herschel Walker is clearly going to be the GOP nominee up against Raphael Warnock. That is going to be a Senate throwdown. I'm looking forward to seeing how that one shakes out. I think Herschel's going to. Obviously, I'm hoping Herschel wins that one. Do you have a particular take
on
already?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think he's going to win. But, Buck, you can gamble on politics. You know I like to gamble on sports, but you can gamble on politics outside of the United States. Not technically legal in the United States. But Herschel is minus 275, which is a pretty substantial favorite to beat Warnock. Kemp is minus 400 to beat Stacey Abrams. That means you'd have to bet $400 to win $100. He's a prohibitive favorite on both sides there. I just think that's interesting for people who are actually putting their money down on what they anticipate happening in Georgia.
By the way, Clay, I mentioned this before. I just wanted to give the stats again. This is from our friend Ryan Gruduski. He's a political analyst yep. and a friend of the show. He put this out. Georgia GOP primary turnout, 2006, 419,000. 2010, 680,000. 2014, 596,000. 2018, 608,000. 2022, 1.1 million. All right.
Yeah.
So people are fired up in Georgia. GOP voters are fired up in Georgia. Raffensperger won, the Secretary of State, and he is somebody people know probably mostly because of, at the national level, I should say, outside the state of Georgia, because he had some, a little bit of kerfuffle. With Trump, it was a little bit of a back and forth with Trump over the situation in Georgia, the election results, etc. So Raffensperger did win. They have an open primary in Georgia, so there was some percentage of formerly registered Democrats who voted for Raffensperger. It was pretty substantial from what I saw. I think it was 7% of his vote came from formerly registered Democrats, for whatever that means. Am I missing any big ones in Georgia? So we got the secretary. There was, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yes.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, she won her primary. They tried to keep her off. We had her on the show to talk about the lawsuit
ridiculous.
Effort to stop her, which was absurd and all that. But, Clay, here's my biggest takeaway from just last night. I want to hear what yours is. Clay and I haven't even been able to chat about this one because we've been talking about the other things going on. I think that this is an indicator of people are really unhappy with Biden. And Republicans are, I think they're the most fired up in my adult lifetime to cast votes in favor of candidates who will stand with freedom, the Constitution, and against the insanity. I think that's, it's not a done deal yet. I think that's what Georgia is showing us right now.
I think it's well said. And by the way, total primary turnout up 63% over 2018. It almost passed the 2020 primaries, which were obviously a presidential election year when everybody was super fired up to get their votes in to pick a Democrat nominee back in 2020. So we've got at OutKick, Buck, official request for comment into Major League Baseball because they tried to brand this as Jim Crow 2.0. I think Major League Baseball should have to apologize to the state of Georgia. I think there are a lot of corporations. Certainly Joe Biden's not going to do it, but we're going to hold them accountable at OutKick because I'm still outraged over the decision to pull the All-Star game out of Atlanta based on a lie, what is we now know a lie. I had two big takeaways from this. One, Buck, to your point, Stacey Abrams and Joe Biden are a bigger story now than Donald Trump is. So if you look at the results with Brian Kemp and you look at the results in that race where he won by 70 to 20%, something like that, people in Georgia overwhelmingly are saying we want Stacey Abrams beaten and we think Brian Kemp has the best option to do it. So this is now a referendum. The midterms, as they should be, are not a referendum on 2020. They are a referendum on what's going on with Joe Biden and Stacey Abrams as a candidate. Second takeaway, Buck. I think Donald Trump has to be very careful in understanding that if he is going to run in 2024, it has to be a forward-looking campaign from his perspective, not a backwards one. Let me explain what I mean by that. The voters are telling us quite clearly that they are unhappy with Joe Biden. If Donald Trump is running in 2024, the only backwards look he needs to be giving is towards Joe Biden and talking about what a bad job he's going to do. I'll use a sports analogy. You can't relitigate 2020 as a part of the 2024 campaign. You, especially if you get to run against Joe Biden again, can argue that people made the wrong choice and here's why they need to pick you going forward. My concern is Trump is going to try to drag everybody back into 2020. We don't need to relitigate 2020. I think the Republicans got screwed. I think Donald Trump got screwed. I think Democrats used COVID to rig the election. I think big tech rigged the election. I think all that happened. But I'll use the sports analogy here, Buck, because Georgia is a big sports state and they're coming off a Braves championship and a Georgia Bulldogs championship. Sometimes you lose a game because there's a bad call made or because the rules are designed incorrectly. You can't continue to talk about the game that you've lost. You have to talk about find a way to win going forward. And to me, what Georgia voters were saying is we're way more concerned about the future now than we are about relitigating the past. And I think if Trump is smart, he will take a lesson from this and start to focus on the things that he would bring if he runs in 2024 for the 4 years more he'd be president, instead of arguing about 2020. That's my big takeaway.
I would add just two things to it. One is the mentality should be we have to win by so much that their cheating doesn't matter.
Yes.
I want to hear if Trump is running again, I think he is, or whatever the case may be, I want to hear the president saying we're going to win by so much that the cheating isn't going to matter. Comma, also, we're going to do everything we can before the votes are cast to make sure, to your point, that they aren't pulling nonsense and shenanigans, which is what they did during the COVID year. I mean, Pennsylvania is a perfect example of this. Pennsylvania state constitution explicitly did not allow some of the voting changes that were made to expand. I mean, it's as clear as day. And what I was having to say to people at the time after that election, after the 2020 election, was, guys, I hear you. You're right. We're right. There's a problem in Pennsylvania with this. No judge is going to say, well, that shouldn't have been the rules that people voted under, therefore I'm going to throw out these votes. Now, that can make people very angry, and I get it, but that was the reality. No judge was going to say, well, the 100,000 votes or the 50,000 votes or whatever it is that came in later than what would have been allowed with the rule change. And we got, basically, Trump campaign got caught flat-footed on the preemptive action against the way the Democrats want to cheat. Because look, my attitude is they always cheat. It's a question of how much. So
I think you're 100% right, Buck. We got to win Wisconsin. We got to win Pennsylvania. We got to win Michigan, Minnesota, Georgia, New Mexico, I think, is in play.
Look at you with Minnesota and New Mexico.
I think Nevada is going to be in play if I can ever learn how to pronounce the state name correctly.
Nevada. So
the people in the state are happy. And I think if you Arizona, certainly Georgia, all of those states, right? I don't want to win by a pinprick. And let's be honest, Trump won in 2016 by a small margin, right? You change 100,000 votes, Hillary's elected, you change 40,000 votes in 2020, we flip the election both ways. Trump or whoever the nominee is in 2024, because I think there's going to be a robust primary debate about who the best Republican standard bearer is. It needs to be a campaign that's not trying to win in the margins. It needs to be a campaign that kicks ass.
I think you could have, with the right GOP candidate, because you and I both know there's not going to be some great turnaround effort from this Biden administration.
Biden's
even
disaster.
They know it's a disaster. This is a mess. It's going to go down in history as one of the least effective, worst presidencies in living memory, certainly, maybe going back, 100 years. And I think the GOP right now, a lot of things can change. Right now is on track to get more than half of the Latino vote.
Yeah.
And maybe double their share of the African-American vote, which would be fantastic.
I mean, it would destroy progress. The Democrat Party as it exists today if that happened.
So we'll have to see. We'll continue to push for this, folks. We'll talk to you more about it in a second. Few coffee companies make the kind of impact that Black Rifle Coffee has been able to over the years. Purely by word of mouth, when this fall a coffee first became available, started to attract a long list of coffee connoisseurs, people that really care about their coffee, like me and Clay. We drink coffee every day, multiple times a day. To Black Rifle's credit, the taste of their coffee was rich and fresh, like the kind of coffee you'd expect to drink right out of the fields in Brazil or Colombia, for instance. The story behind this coffee brand was started by a veteran, Evan Hafer, who has a lifelong passion for a great cup of coffee anywhere he happens to be. Even when he was in war zones, in fact, when Evan had a few minutes to himself, he improvised making in the field, out beyond the wire, the best coffee he possibly could. He was making it in his Humvee sometimes. Years later, Black Rifle is a publicly traded company making coffee for more Americans than ever before. They take their freshly roasted premium beans and ship them right to your home. You determine if you want them as whole beans or fresh grounds when they arrive. And if you want the Keurig cup style, they'll send you those too. Any way they arrive, you're going to love this coffee. Many of us also join the Black Rifle Coffee Club. That way, when we get the coffee we like delivered on the schedule we choose, we get a first look at what they're introducing next and get great discounts and special deals. Purchase right now at blackriflecoffee.com and use our names, Clay and Buck, as the promo code at checkout for 20% off your purchase. That's blackriflecoffee.com. Use the code Clay and Buck. You'll get 20% off your purchase. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. On Purpose is dedicated to helping you be happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how he got comfortable with fear, navigating the changes in relationships, and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern. This conversation shows a never-seen-before side to Orlando Bloom and his unique life journey.
I think we all struggle sometimes to really deeply believe that we are enough, that we're valued, that we're valuable. You know, we're imprinted by our parents from the age of 0 to 7, right? Mm. I'm constantly trying to go like, how do I detach from this idea of, is that my baggage? It look like my baggage. I mean, I know. Oh, okay, that's mine. Let's unpack that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been
juicy.
The podcast
juicy.
Would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show, rolling through the Wednesday edition of the program. I want to let you know that we are scheduled to be joined by Kelly Loeffler. We'll talk about the outcome of the Georgia elections with her. And then Kellyanne Conway, who has a new book out, will join us at 2:30 Eastern. Both of those guests in the third hour of the program. Obviously, a lot of you have wanted to weigh in on what is going on in so many different topics that we have been discussing. And let's go first to John in Jacksonville. John, what's up?
Hey, earlier in the show, you played a clip from the basketball coach, Steve Kerr, and very emotional. His premise that oh, let's get background checks. That is already being done in about 99% of all gun sales. The only time it is not done, of course, in private seller to private seller, which in the big scheme of things is a very, very small amount of transactions. I mean, you got to, back in the day when I was growing up in the 70s, you could buy a long gun with no check at all. And now they even run a check for a shotgun. They run a check. And so, it's, I mean, so, what he's yelling at is already being done.
Yeah, because Steve Kerr is an ignoramus.
The guy legally bought guns, right? Yes. So if you can't implement a policy that would stop this from happening, then all you're doing is screaming at the heavens. Thank you for the call, by the way. But that's just what we were saying.
Yeah, he bought two semi-automatic rifles from a federally licensed firearms dealer. They just gave an updated press conference from Uvalde, Texas, where the governor was giving the latest details, and he said that there actually was no official mental health history of meaning that he had not been institutionalized or anything like that. So I just bring that up because to Andy's point before about red flag laws for gun purchasing or taking someone's guns away, even if you were willing to give that power, and I think what Andy McCarthy said is so spot on, which is can't trust people that are, you know, just maniacal gun grabbers in general against everybody to use those laws the way they're intended. But even put that aside for a second, if the guy isn't, if this shooter is now dead, isn't in any way in the system will clear him and he'll buy the gun. He'll buy the gun legally. And then even beyond that, you have straw. I mean, people say, well, where do all the illegal guns come from? A lot of it's straw purchases where someone is risking a federal prison sentence. I mean, someone's actually they're breaking the law to buy a gun to give to somebody else for money who has not passed the background check. How do you stop that? Well, it's a crime, but people do it all the time. So it's not as easy as just take action. I mean, that's the bottom line. And for people to screaming at everyone, take action all the time, including Beto O'Rourke. We'll get to that in a little bit. He interrupted the press conference. He's a disgusting idiot, but he interrupted the press conference that the governor of Texas was holding on this issue. We'll give you the updates on that in a few minutes. Jack in Louisiana. Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Hey, good afternoon. I'm a former intelligence officer, and I used to practice law public school system in Michigan. And one thing I want to bring to your attention is something that Michigan schools are been toying with, experimenting with for at least a couple of years, and that's the threat identification working groups. It's kind of on the board level. And what these working groups do, it's distinguished from red flag laws. I think listening to your prior conversations and guests, these working groups get together and based upon a federal template that's out there, they come up with a list of factors. Basically, they're observables. So people have to be involved in other people's lives. It is to work, and I think that's why you hear a lot of these quote calls for action, do something. But these factors would be something like, you know, discovery of a manifesto online or statement to a girlfriend that he's going to hurt somebody. And when a series of these factors are checked, there's a certain, at least the models that I work with, there would be a certain series of steps. It'd be a graduated approach that the board would take. Of course, including the parents, these threat working group committees would be composed of parents, school members, local law enforcement. But it'd be a series of steps. So one might be, searching the kid's room for a gun.
We've got, thank you, by the way, for the call. We've got to go to end the hour here. I think everybody is talking about potential ways to keep this from happening. And, Buck, we're going to continue to talk about this.
Yeah, we have details, updated details, by the way, on exactly what, you know, the security situation was and all that. We'll tell you coming up.
Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the front lines of truth.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast.
This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.